We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
Amy Kurtz is a trailblazing author, certified health coach, patient advocate, and speaker. She's dedicated to empowering patients to reclaim agency over their physical, mental, and emotional well-being. Her newest book is But You Look Fine, Trapped in the Hell Between Sick and Well and How to Break Free. Welcome to the show, Amy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, excited to have you on. Tell us a little bit about your personal lives, more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Well, I live in New York City, and my personal life took a turn that I didn't expect. I was an actor, and around 25, I got very sick, and it sent me on a real healing journey, which is why I now write books and speak to audiences with people who have struggled with chronic invisible illnesses and taking their health into their own hands. And it wasn't what I had originally planned, but it's where my path took me.
Chronic invisible illnesses. Illness is bad, invisible, bad, worse, chronic invisible illness, really, really triple whammy.
That's pretty bleak.
Not to make a joke about it, but
no, not at all.
Tell me more about those. Are there lots?
Well, for me, I had struggled with misdiagnosis of Lyme disease for literally decades, and this could be anything from autoimmune disorders to lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, Lyme like me, fibromyalgia, and then MS. There are a lot of them that look like you look fine on the outside, but you don't feel well on the inside. And I think there's so many dynamics that go with living with a condition like that. There's first getting the right diagnosis, and then also making sure you're with the right doctor, making sure that you're an active participant in your own health. You know, 194 million Americans now live with at least one chronic health condition. That's a 25% increase since I wrote my first book. So if you don't have one, then someone you love definitely does. And I just feel that society hasn't quite caught up with how to treat people that experience these things, that it really, really affects their daily lives. And so I'm very passionate about speaking about it.
I just can't imagine suffering the way that you did for as long as you did and having Lyme disease. I've had conversations with other people that have also suffered with it. Why is it so miscommonly? Why is it missed so frequently?
Well, I think that we are behind the eight ball in understanding Lyme and the co-infections that can come with it. It's not always easy to diagnose because you don't always know that you have it. You know, only if you're lucky, 30% of people will get a bullseye rash, which is a sign that you've been bitten by a tick. But most of the time, it just quietly, slowly invades. And another way that you could know that you have it is if you get really intense flu-like symptoms about 10 days after you've been somewhere in a more wooded area. But there aren't a lot of Lyme literate doctors. And so unfortunately, when people do initially catch it, they're not necessarily treated in the way that they need to be for as long as they need to be. And I feel there's not as much information about prevention as there should be, because there are ways to make yourself feel better or have less of a chance of getting bitten by a tick. And for me, I grew up in the 90s. Like, I grew up in outside of Philly, and that's the Lyme belt. But even then, no one was talking about having Lyme disease. My father's a doctor, and it wasn't as if I didn't have resources to see good physicians. It just was something that nobody was really talking about. And as I look back now, in my 40s, I see all of my early symptoms. Like when I was a teenager, it was very clear to me that I've always had it.
Wow. So, talking about taking control of your health, what do you mean? Is it just multifaceted? It's educating yourself, it's nutrition, it's exercise.
I love this question. I really believe that if you are going to live well as a patient with any kind of chronic health condition or just a person in general, you have to have agency over your health and well-being. And that means that you are an active participant in healing. 80% of, I think Mark Hyman, Dr. Mark Hyman said that 80% of the work that you do is outside of the doctor's office. This is with nutrition, with lifestyle, with the environment that you live in, with community, with meditation and stress reduction techniques. Ultimately, those are up to you to take into your own hands. And I feel that, in our society, from a very young age, we're taught to defer to a person that's in power. We do this when we're kids with our parents. We defer to them. Doctor knows best is something we've always heard. And that very well might be true in many cases for me, on my 36th doctor, it certainly was. But it took a long time to get there. And the best part about the tail end of my healing, and I think ultimately my full recovery, has been having agency over my health. We're not taught that there are so many things that we can do to make ourselves feel better. And with the disease rate as high as it is, it's so essential that we start to recognize, hey, I have to learn how to live well to be well.
So, you, I do not think, you correct me where I'm wrong. You weren't just going with the flow, and you hadn't resigned yourself. You were still trying to figure out what was the matter. These people, so many people who are struggling with these chronic conditions, have they resigned themselves to just not feeling good?
I think in many cases, it's a very complex medical system. It's you, in often cases, need privilege to be able to see the best doctors, and that's really hard and something that I really hope changes. But, it was sort of two things for me. One is I knew that something was wrong, and I never gave up on myself, but slowly over time, trust in myself did erode a bit by people's reactions to me. And it was really disorienting because I've always been a very strong-minded person and I have a lot of will and I was very resilient. However, being told you're fine when you're telling someone you're not, being told that it might be in your head, which a lot of patients with chronic disease hear all the time, unfortunately, or do you need a Xanax or whatever it is. It's very disorienting to have somebody basically saying, I don't believe you, because it's not in what I learned in my schooling. And we have a medical system that is miraculous and it saves lives. And like I said, my father is a doctor and it is wonderful. However, there are real complex chronic health conditions that sort of fall into what I call the land of the lost within the system that we have, which forces people and patients to look outside of that into functional medicine and to learning ways that they can figure out what is affecting what and how they can help the whole body. Because it's a system now that sees the body in parts. And there's no part of us that isn't interconnected. Like I find a lot of patients that I work with struggle with feeling like, oh, well, they're treating this physically, but I'm affected by it in other ways. And that's what led me to write my new book, But You Look Fine, which is that I physically was better. And there's a dichotomy in our society, like you're either sick or you're well, and there's nothing in between. But that's both ridiculous and also kind of insane, because for many patients like me, you've had a life-altering health experience that has changed everything in your life, everything about you, everything about everything you ever thought your life would be. And yet you're supposed to just jump back on a horse, but the horse isn't even there. I mean, the horse has left, and so is the cruise ship, and nothing is where you left it. So for me, it felt like I had almost like there was a ghost behind me just following me everywhere, because I realized I was having like real anxiety, hypervigilance, fear, feeling like it was all going to come back, and yet I was better. So true healing to me, and what I hope the future of healthcare looks like, is integrating the mental, emotional, neurological reaction and imprint of physical illness.
There's a lot of heavy stuff right there, Amy. My goodness.
Hopefully not too heavy. No.
What a horribly fascinating journey to know that you are sick or unwell, and everybody's like, "You're fine. It's all in
you
your
look
head."
Fine.
Yeah, you look fine, and it's like, are people just irritated by the fact that I'm telling them that I'm not well, even though I do look fine? Are these doctors who are telling you that? And what does that inflection point look like, where you're like, well, maybe I'm losing my mind, maybe I'm actually crazy, and I just can't even imagine.
Yeah, I never really felt like that, but I did feel, you know, it's like I said, there's an older model of looking at things as the body in parts and pieces. But it's also that nobody really teaches you how to support someone you love that is struggling with a health condition, any kind of health condition. This could be an autoimmune, it could be Lyme, it could be cancer, it could be having a stroke. Nobody teaches you how to have conversations around something really painful and difficult. And so the patient, myself included, also often feels like you have to just put on a mask to be included. But it also is hard for the people that love you, because they really actually don't know what to say. I don't think people mean to be rude or invalidating. I think they truly don't know how to be supportive. And this is something like I've talked a lot about, which is that saying things like, but you look fine, or any better, or they didn't catch that yet, is so invalidating.
Right.
But changing it and saying, how are you feeling? How can I support you? I'm so sorry that this has been so challenging for you. What do you need from me? Those are all ways to be in connection with the person that you love.
Well, that certainly makes sense. And people that care about you, they want you to be doing well, but they don't know what to say. They don't know how to engage. And so they just say dumb stuff like, well, you look fine. You know, geez, they haven't caught that yet. So it's not that they're super burned out or trying to be mean or malicious, just that we don't have the tools.
Yeah.
True healing. So the I wrote down the challenge of being healthy again, and returning to get back on the horse, but the horse took off along with the cruise ship, kind of a thing. And it's this ghost of the person that you were when you were a teenager, and now it's, you know, years later. How do I return to that? Is it just feeling normal but not remembering what normal was?
Well, that's the thing, right? I actually just had a conversation last week with someone who was a doctor, and he said to me, I do see this all the time, this like aftermath, but I don't know what the name is. And I always sort of thought that people just need time. But that's the thing, right? Like in America, we don't give people time for recovery. There is no recovery. It's sick or well. There's nothing in between. It's a dichotomy, and it makes no sense. It's literally insane. And for a patient, it's impossible to pave over your pain. You just can't do that, because it will show up in ways that you wouldn't expect later, like it did to me. But, you know, there is a gift in struggling with chronic disease. One, it strips away everything that's not really important. It puts a lot of things in perspective. It also allowed me to find a depth within myself and a life path that I took that I would have never, ever, ever ever found if I hadn't been faced with such adversity. So there is always a blessing in something that feels so hard, and it might not feel easy now, but or that it's even possible to feel better from what you're suffering through, but it does. And it's been a true gift to me in so many ways. Like, I've tapped into places of myself that I probably never would have even been aware of before. But the real thing is that, like, so millions of people are suffering in silence from this invisible wound. Doctors don't diagnose it. Nobody talks about it. Sufferers don't admit to it. And it doesn't have to be that way. It shouldn't be that way. There shouldn't be things that you have to suffer through silently. And like I said, my hope is when through this book and naming what I call MTB, that the mental and emotional is tied in with the physical in terms of healing.
Trying to remember what MTB stands for.
I called it medical trauma brain, but basically when I started to feel better, like I really felt like I had a new body, I started to suffer in a different way. I didn't even know what was happening. It wasn't even until my husband said to me, "Hey, I think you went through a lot of trauma. And I think there's a second phase to this." And I was like, what? This dude with no medical training just said exactly what it was. It was like this, you know, it was like the second shoe dropped. And then it sent me on this quest to really look into, what is this that I'm feeling? Why am I so high strung? Why am I so afraid and bracing for impact and anxious and hypervigilant? And I started to ask a lot of doctors, have you seen anything like this where somebody is better, but they're not better? And so many of them were like, oh yeah, like, yes, we have seen that. It's the patient who's physically better, but doesn't feel like they are better or doesn't understand. And for me, it was like my body was better, but my mind hadn't gotten the memo. My nervous system had gotten so locked into fight or flight that I couldn't get off the hamster wheel. And then I realized, like, this is a form of post-traumatic stress. However, post-traumatic stress disorder is based on one incident that happens that's traumatic. Complex post-traumatic stress disorder is when the event happens over and over and over again. But what I call MTB is when your body is the threat because you no longer feel safe within your home, which is the only place you have to live. But nobody talks about it. So many people are suffering in silence and don't even know this is happening to them. And you see it with so many different kinds of patients. I've interviewed thousands of patients, and it can be anything from the migraine sufferer who feels an aura coming on, pops an Advil on the couch before anything has even happened, or the cancer patient's going back for the scan and is terrified in a debilitated way to go even see what the result could be, to a Lyme patient who gets a joint flare and feels like, oh my God, it's all going to come back just as it was. So I started to pick up on, like, this is a real pattern and nobody's saying it out loud. So I'm going to name it for all of those patients.
And it makes perfect sense as you describe it. So this false dichotomy of sick and well, if I'm walking down the street, I'm well, I fall down and break my leg, all of a sudden I'm sick. It's this thing that happens and I can get a cast and I'm fine. But what we're talking about is the reality that our recovery, it could take years, it could be an entire lifetime. But beginning to advocate for yourself means understanding self-care and understanding that there's maintenance that has to be going on, and we should constantly be exploring and checking in and giving ourselves more of what we need. Think about it from like a vitamin standpoint versus a pill of some kind.
Yeah. I also, what you said is interesting to me because, like, if you tear a ligament or you have an injury, you go to a surgeon that you hopefully trust. You have a plan. You know how long you're supposed to be out for. You know when you start physical therapy. You know you go to see the doctor. There's a plan. There's an aftercare plan. And usually, for the most part, it works. But when you have complex chronic disease, there's no after plan. There's just an expectation that it's over. So what's the problem? But it's like I literally went from 25 to 41 and I blinked. And there's a real sense of grief that comes with losing what you thought your life was going to be. But there's no space for somebody to really process that. And so important that patients take that into their own hands and also realize that in this day and age, there's so much you can do. There's so many ways to eat differently that's all in your hands that could help you feel so much better. It's the way you move, it's the way you de-stress, it's the way you tune into yourself and tune out the outer world. It's the way you make sure your home is as healthy as possible with water and air. And there's just so many things that people can do that they don't realize are within their power.
Just have to make the decision that you're interested and willing to do that work.
Yeah, because nobody wants to just feel sick and tired. I don't think so.
I know I don't.
Yeah.
So the people, we talked a little bit about how people are wanting. Maybe not everybody, but most people that are in your life want you to feel better. We just don't have the tools. How do you think about just our relationships as a component to being well? Do you get rid of some people? Do you seek out other kinds of people?
You're talking about in your community?
Yes.
Well, it's really interesting because it's almost like a crucible. When you get sick and really sick, especially when you're young, a lot of people just disappear. I know that that's a universal experience that so many patients struggle with. It's so painful, but it also opens up space for people who are really meant to be in your life, who are really amazing, like A plus friends that can enter. Because when your space is filled with really unsupportive people, you don't really have the capacity for being thoughtful about who you let in. And it's essential, like community is essential to have people who really support you and see you and who you feel like you don't have to put on a mask for. And even if that's just two people, that's so much better than 30 friends who really don't care that much and don't know how to show up and don't have the capacity to handle what you're going through.
How do you counsel people or work with people to, I mean, you can't do this all at once and starting to worry about what's in my home and what I should be eating and how I should move. I think that that would be maybe overwhelming for some people. So how do you enter the work?
It all starts with one step, and it is totally patient by patient. It's really about where they are, what they're willing to change, how far along they are. I mean, there's so much work that I do with people about streamlining their doctor care because they're seeing way too many people. They're taking way too many things and throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what will stick. They don't even know what's working. They're desperate. They're sad. They're lost in how to even find the right person. So for me, like, I really love helping somebody make sure that they're with the right doctor for them, not just the right doctor for what everybody says is the best, but what is right for them to feel safe in someone's care. And then make sure they have a parachute so they have their like top doctors, healers, thought leaders, whoever it is, meditation teacher, and really streamline their process so they feel supported because so oftentimes patients feel like they have to manage everything themselves. But how on earth are you supposed to get better if you're managing everything and communicating between all people? I mean, you barely have energy to get your ass to the doctor's office, let alone try to be in charge of everything. So that's number one. Number two is I don't think that anything should happen all at once because you have to try things and see what works for you. And if you do too much at once, you never know what's doing what. So, like, diet is a place I think everyone can start in. If you're struggling with an autoimmune or chronic disease, like an anti-inflammatory diet, just try. Just try to take out two inflammatory things that you love to eat and just see how you feel. But ultimately, it's about finding your agency in what makes you feel good, not doing everything at once, one step at a time, one step, one breath, one choice. Does it work? Does it not work? It's about building your toolbox.
That makes sense. Well, Amy, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for sharing your story and helping other people who, the countless people, you said it was a giant percentage of people that are now living with a chronic condition.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that because certainly don't want, I want to minimize the number of people who are going through what you had to go through. So I appreciate it. How can people learn more about you? How can they connect? Where can they get their copy of But You Look Fine?
Well, my new book, But You Look Fine, Trapped in the Hell Between Sick and Well and How to Break Free, comes out June 9th and anywhere books are sold. You can find me on my website, amykurtz.com, or my Instagram _AmyKurtz. I hope it helps. And if any of this resonated with somebody who's listening, I really hope that it helps you. It certainly saved me in writing it.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed this much as I did, show Amy your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to amykurtz.com, AmyKurtz. Find her on Instagram, Amy Kurtz, and then pick up your copy of But You Look Fine wherever you buy your books. Thanks again, Amy.
Thank you.
Until next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.